everyone. This is Mike Prayer with Get on the Trail Streetport and also the Louisiana Trail Report.
And this is Brad Caldwell with the Louisiana Trail Report and the Wild Azalea. That's me.
Brad, you don't sound very excited, but I'm super pumped because we have our second guest today.
We do.
And
not,
yes,
do we
it's
really?
Casey Urschel from Lazy Hound Racing,
yes,
in the New Orleans area. And I'm just super excited to talk to him because he's a good dude. I met him on several occasions at races and whatnot. And I think it's going to be a great interview. So you need to get your energy up.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll work on it. Now, I recall Casey doing Wild Azalea many years ago. And seemed like a very pleasant, very honorable young man.
Yeah, he's a good dude. Hey, so let's go ahead and get right into, before we introduce him in a couple minutes, we're going to go ahead and get our beer report done for today. And today, we went South Louisiana a little bit
we
on
did.
This one.
You did.
Yeah,
I say, you did.
So today we have one from Gnarly Barley. Okay.
Gnarly Barley.
Yes, and it is in Hammond, Louisiana, which I understand that they grow some strawberries and
well,
stuff down there.
Well, nearby in Ponchatoula, the famous strawberry festival.
So I wouldn't be surprised if when I was scrolling through their list of beers, if they had a strawberry one on here somewhere.
Well, I would hope they would. And so years ago, I was
on. They
do. They do. Mm-hmm. See, years ago, I was on a plane. I was going backpacking out in Yosemite. And I sat next to a guy whose he and his father were they weren't strawberry farmers, but they were like the middle guy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The middle
oh,
guy
yeah.
that
they were like
that
brokers or
brokers.
Something.
Thank
yeah.
you very much. Thank you. And he'd never heard of Ponchatoula strawberries. And this is I was thinking, dude, this you know all he knows is like when you go to like Kroger or well Brookshire's up here, perhaps Kroger down there. They don't have Schwagman's anymore, they do. But anyway, long story short, he never heard of Ponchatoula strawberries. And I educated him on Ponchatoula strawberries. As a matter of fact, I will say that Ponchatoula strawberries are the best strawberries I've ever had. And this is prime season right now for Ponchatoula strawberries.
Well, that's a big statement. All right, well, let's go ahead and hear you open up the can there.
Okay, and so this is called Juicifer?
Yeah, this is Juicifer. It's an IPA, and it's probably one of their... The ones that's more prominent that I see in this area.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's me, right? You've already opened yours up.
No, I can. We can double open.
One, un, deux, trois. Oh, gosh. I spilt it all over the mic.
Wow.
It's in my glasses.
Amateur.
My reading glasses.
Amateur.
Bad.
All right, so real
that's
quick.
That's a go-home stain. You ever had a go-home stain, by the way?
I have. So I had one about 2 weeks ago at work, and it was a go-home stain.
You've been at a restaurant. So this is for folks that don't know what a go-home stain is. You're at a restaurant, or you're out with friends and whatever, and all of a sudden, either a beer spills on you, or spaghetti sauce, or anything,
yeah.
And honestly, there's nothing to do but to go home.
Well, go-home stains are bad, but you know what else is bad? And this doesn't happen to me because I'm 5'11", but when I was 5'7", or 5'6", this happened a lot. And you would go up to the edge of a counter, and the counter would be wet, like in the bathroom, and you would get it on your crotch.
Oh, that's
and
bad.
Then it looks like you did something
you did.
In your pants.
Yeah, you did.
And then you got to get a paper towel and start rubbing, which that is not
that
a good look
good
if
either.
Somebody walks in the bathroom and
that's
sees you
bad.
Furiously rubbing on your crotch with a paper towel.
That's not bad.
They think that things are going on, and you're just trying to dry your pants.
You just got to go home.
Yeah.
You just had to go home. Okay, so here comes my taste. Ready?
Okay.
Well, that's not really kind of hoppy, Michael.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't think it's as hoppy as the last one that we had.
I think it's pretty hoppy.
Okay, so, like, we looked at the color. This is a new feature. We looked at the color a little bit in a pint glass. And it's not as hazy as a lot of, like a Ghost in the Machine or a Holy Roller from Urban South. So, to me, it's not as cloudy or hazy as that. It's got a little bit of it, but it still has a really pretty, like, golden color to it. But to me, it tastes really good. And if you look at it, it says it's made with Mosaic and Citra. Hops, and this is a 6% alcohol beer.
I think that's what got me.
Did you taste it all 6%?
I think I took a. I think they had the top 6% at the very top. Yeah, not. It wasn't in the spit zone. It was in the top. So
to me, I like it better than the little victories that we had several weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I went back and listened to that episode. And as much as I love Great Raft, I think I was just being a little bit of a homer on that episode because I think I overranked that beer.
The Trail Dog?
No, the Little Victories, the very first
I'm totally paying attention.
I gave it a 4, and really I gave the Trail Dog a 4, and the Trail Dog was clearly, to me, better than the Little Victories.
I think it was superior. Yeah.
But so, can I go back and change the score on the Little Victories to like a 3.5?
You want to officially amend?
I don't want to edit the episode or anything.
No, but you want to go on record right now saying you want to amend.
As much as I love Great Raft and their brews, and I mean, there are several of them I'll give a 5 to. That one I got to go back and take away the 4, give it a 3.5, because this one to me is a solid 3.75.
Really?
Yeah. And so it's more, I think, than the Little Victories, but not as good as the Trail Dog, in my opinion.
Okay, Michael, it says Indian Pale Ale. I have no idea what that means. Is that like...
I think it's an India Pale Ale, not Indian Pale Ale.
Oh, yeah. You're right. I can't...
It's a Pocahontas
first sip
Pale.
Kind of threw me out there. Yeah. Plus, I got to go home stain, man.
I don't think... It's beer. It'll dry fine. It says, doing it your way in Hammond... Our way. Doing it our way in Hammond, Louisiana.
Home of Southeastern Louisiana State University. They still call it SLU. I don't know. I need to find out.
Only we had some way to instantly look information up at our fingertips.
I've been to Hammond, and I actually timed a race in Hammond many, many years ago. That's the last time I was on the campus there. I know one guy that went to SLU. I don't know if he graduated, but I know he went there. So there you go. That's close enough.
But if you go to their website, gnarlybeer.com, you'll see they have a bunch of different varieties. They've got like a Oktoberfest called Fest Beer, and they've got one called the Catahoula Common Strawberry. Strawberry Catahoula Common.
Oh, that's a pretty cool name.
Yeah. And one geared toward bicyclists, I guess. It's called Gear Me American Light Lager.
Really?
And they've got a bunch of different brands. Belgian. They got wheat beers.
Okay. All right.
Well, dark beers.
So is it time to score it?
Yeah, I already did with a 3.75. I went 3.75 on this one.
3.487.
Looking at the can, it's got like some kind of lizardy looking creature on it, like on a orange inner tube. It's got some pretty colors. It's like purple and yellow and orange. And he's sticking his tongue out, and I don't
maybe
know quite what he's doing. What do you call that character? It looks like a gecko lizard?
It's something. He's got like a devil. He's got a devil's tail coming out of his derriere.
And he's got a little pair of buttocks on him there.
Yeah, and he's got a tongue, and it's either, I don't think he's trying to get a mosquito or something.
It looks like he's trying to lick the little dropping Juicifer stuff off of him. I don't know.
I'm not sure about that.
Well, overall, a pretty enjoyable beer, I think.
Wouldn't be the first one I would go for, but, I mean, I drink it.
Hey, if you know of anybody who lives in Hammond or knows about trails around Hammond, hey, let us know about some trails, and maybe we'll come down to Hammond, go to Gnarly Barley, and drink beer there and run some trails.
We'll do that. So, again, did we say we're broadcasting live from the Run Wild Studios?
We are
near downtown Shreveport.
But we did not say that.
Yeah, but we are near downtown Shreveport.
So, Brad, we got a little bit of time before Casey joins us.
Yes, we do.
It's a Sunday afternoon, and we are going to be interviewing him in about 20 minutes, but we have a little time to kill. I want to talk real quick, Brad. We went back out to Eddie D. Jones, which is where the Screaming Monkey Race is held in November, first Saturday in November.
Yeah.
And so, Brad, last year we got some news that we had to make some course changes, and then come to find out that we didn't, because they were going to let us use this bridge that had kind of been condemned for vehicles and horses, but they let us use it for the race. They deemed it okay for walkers and people to run across.
Yes.
I think that's changed. It's gotten a little worse. We got a new park director this year, so we're going to have to make some changes. So that's what we were out there doing last week.
Yeah.
And here's the good news is I'm going to – there's probably 18 or 19 miles of trail out there. I could make an 18 or 19-mile loop.
Yeah.
But I really like the 15.5-mile loop that I have. It works out really good. So – we are going to make some changes, so it's going to be different than what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But those changes, Brad, are going to result in quite possibly some wet feet this year.
So, it's a trail run.
It's trail running, right?
Yeah, who cares?
You know, there'll be one section where it is quite possible that people will be up to their knees, and there's really no way around it. But I think it'll be fun, although that's, some people, that's a draw, Brad.
So we were out there, and I've made this mention to you. You will not do this, but because I would like to have the participants traverse the stream that the bridge goes over.
Yeah.
And we could easily cut a path and put a rope up, AKA Western States style. Okay?
Yes.
But I know you're not going to do it, but I would love that. I would bring extra shoes and a lot of extra socks, and you're just going to get wet. But you're not going to do it.
I'm not ruling anything out at this point, Brad. That is still a possibility.
We held Wild as Egg one year the water was almost up to, well, the shin bone. The higher shin bone below the knee, but we endured.
Yeah,
that's part of trail running.
Well, the good news is I've filed the permit. Everything's looking good for the first weekend in November. We are going to have a loop. It's not going to be what it was. So if you ran it before and you thought, oh, it's going to be different, it's going to be just as great, if not better. A great course. You can hear chimpanzees while you run the course. You can hear bells from the nearby Veterans Cemetery. And it's still going to be about a 15.5-mile loop, Brad.
Well, and it will be, and the course was in great shape.
You're going to get your feet wet, most likely. Yeah, that's okay. Now, it's trail running.
Let's go back. Michael, we had a problem last Saturday, didn't we?
Did we have a problem?
We had a problem last Saturday.
Was it me?
So, y'all... Michael texts me and says, we're going out to the monkey trails. I'll come pick you up. And I said, okay, I'll be there at 7:30. Didn't that what you told me, 7:30?
Yes.
I said, I got to wait until 8, okay, because I'm not a morning person. So you said... you're looking. He's looking through the text right there.
All right, here we go. Here it is.
Here's the problem. You. I thought you said okay. Yeah, something to that effect. So I get prepared. I get my girly backpack, which I always wear, and I'm on my front porch, and it's 15 minutes after 8, and I finally call you and say, "Hey, man, where are you?" And you said, "Well, I'm already out here." You ditched me.
Okay, so here's what transpired Saturday morning at 5:52 a.m. You sent me a text that said, sorry, I went to bed at 9 o'clock, .. Okay, .. But for me, it'll be close to 8, meaning he wanted to go closer to 8.
Thank you. I'm not a morning
person. So, of course, I didn't respond at 5:54 because I was sleeping. So then at 6:53, he sent me ?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. So I just simply responded with okay.
That's it.
Then I said, okay, that's okay, saying I got your information. Okay. That's all that okay meant. Then I said, I'm leaving -, can come get you.
Thank you.
Then you said, I need 30 .. Wife just woke up and she likes to talk for a bit.
Why not?
Which I don't know why. You're not a morning person who want to talk to you.
I just listen.
And I said, okay. Now, that okay for me was not signifying
that's
fine with me. It was signifying that's okay what you're doing. But I had already told you I'm leaving, Dash. I was leaving at 7:30.
We're going to post this on the Facebook page and let people
decide. And then you said, see you in 30. And then you said, okay, I'm ready. And I said, we will see you then.
We?
Me and our buddy Chad.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, I stood on my porch because you said, okay,
like a jilted prom date.
Okay. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching the morning walkers go by my neighborhood. I wait with some people. They asked me, what are you doing, Brad? I said, I'm waiting on a friend. They said, that's a Rolling Stones song. I said, well, I know it is, but I'm waiting on a friend.
And well, at least you weren't waiting on a corner in Winslow, Arizona.
And then it's true. And then 10 minutes later, they come back. Bye, Brad. I'm still waiting on a friend. And finally, I called. And I was given the terrible news that you ditched me. And you almost pulled a Todd on me, man.
No, I was there.
Well, that's true.
I was at the event.
Anyway, yeah, we're going to have to maybe put this on the face. We're going to put it.
I've been accused by my wife of not giving the best text.
Yes.
let me remember.
You're that guy that you get a text from and you have to think about it. Like, what does he mean here?
I have a special app on my phone called Cryptic Text where it just makes every text I go to send more cryptic.
All right, so we're wrapping it up because we're fixing to get Casey on the line. Any last thoughts before we talk to Casey?
No, we went over the Juicifer today from Naughty Barley and Hammond. Right. It was good. We talked about some changes coming to the Screaming Monkey, which is the first weekend in November.
Yeah.
If you haven't made your plans for the fall running season, now is the time to make them. Looking up on Ultra Sign Up. Come on out. We'd love to have you. And then we talked about how I am not a good texter.
He's not. And so Casey is up next.
Hey, everybody. This is Mike with the Louisiana Trail Report and Get on the Trail Streetport LLC and the Screaming Monkey 100. Hey, we have a rare opportunity today to talk to another Louisiana race director.
We do.
He is the race director of one of the more unique ultras I've done in the last couple years. It's called the New Orleans Ultra Marathon. I had a great time. I saw parts of the city I've never seen before.
Really?
And that race director is Casey Urschel. So, Casey, welcome to the Louisiana Trail Report.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. And, yes, that is definitely a unique race, one of the few that is actually not on a trail.
I think it's the only one in Louisiana I'm aware of that is an ultra not on the trail.
Give me some ideas. Where do you like? You run through City Park or things like that, or what? What's the main?
Yeah, so I completely stole the idea on that race from one of my favorite races I've ever done. It's called the Great New York 100 Mile Running Extravaganza. So it's in New York City.
Yeah.
Mission Times Square, and you just do this humongous loop all over New York. And the race director up there, in order to make sure that you stay on track, he spray paints little arrows on the ground for 100 freaking miles. And so I thought, we got to do that in New Orleans. Now, I'm not stupid enough to put on a 100-miler like Mike over here.
Yeah.
But we can do a 50. At least I get to go to sleep that night. So we decided to put on a 50-miler and a 50K in that same fashion. And it just kind of runs all over some of my favorite parts of the city. So started that. This will actually be the fifth year that I put that on. So my wife Angela and our buddy David and his wife, you know, kind of are the main ones that put that on, and a whole bunch of other folks that help volunteer their time. But yeah, the idea is just, you know, we sat down maybe about 5 years ago and just started looking at the map and said, you know, when we go for a run in New Orleans, where do we like to run? Well, Audubon Park is great. Love running up and down St. Charles. I'll occasionally run through the French Quarter, Esplanade, Lafitte Greenway, City Park, and so on. So we try to connect as many of those places as we can. And then I think the other thing I always had in mind is I don't want just a regular old aid station. I want aid stations to try to be at landmarks if we can. So annually, probably our two favorite, most popular aid stations. One is at Snake and Jake's, which is the diviest dive bar you've ever been to in your entire life. And if you run fast enough, you can actually get there before they close down at about 7 o'clock in the morning.
I like it.
And then another one is at Louisiana Running Company. That's usually about mile 15 or so. And so, not only is that an aid station, but Pat that owns LRC has always been very, very gracious and very generous with letting us use that space. And it kind of just turns into a big Saturday morning party and cookout and aid station and everything in between. So
where's the base of operations? Like, where's the start, finish, or whatever?
So that one, we've switched it up.
It was Jackson Square the year I did it.
The year, yeah. But it's always started in Jackson Square.
Mm-hmm.
The first year, the 50 miler ended back in Jackson Square. And, you know, New Orleans has a pretty busy calendar, right? So sometimes it's tough to even remember what all is going on in the city.
Mm-hmm.
So the finish line was back in Jackson Square. And the folks that finished, let's say, between the 11 and 12 hour cutoff were greeted with the Halloween parade that had been pushed back. I think it had been pushed back or rescheduled a week. So people are literally running to the finish down, I think that's Decatur or South Peters, and there's a parade lining up. So, you know, I'm standing out in Jackson Square trying to, like, wave my arms at the runners in a big sea of people. And, of course, everybody else that's out there has no idea what the hell's going on. So, so we decided that's probably not the best idea to try that again. So last three years, we finished at Second Line Brewing. And that's just a place that's just kind of right in the heart of Mid-City. They're just a place a lot of runners hang out. The owner's, you know, he's a pretty active guy, runner, biker, that kind of thing. So They help us out with giving us a nice space to hang out and, you know, contribute some beer and just make it a good place for a finish line now.
So it's a 50 miler, right? That's the only distance you have?
No. So 50 miler and 50K. Last year we added a half marathon just to kind of switch it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And that ended up being pretty popular. So we're doing that again this year.
Oh, that's cool. We got to go down, Michael.
I have been.
You did. I got to go down.
Definitely in for going again.
Let's do it.
And I had a great time. And I when I went into Audubon Park, I saw Cesar Torres was there that day working that aid station. And I've
been
with him briefly, and then I kept on going, and a guy come up on my left, and I start chatting him up, and then we're just running along, and he wasn't in the race, but I thought he was, so I followed him, and I went about a mile and a half in the wrong direction, and then he veered off, and I'm like, hey, where are you going? Because there wasn't anything to go to the left, and the dude finally went to the left after a mile and a half. He's like, I'm going to my house, and I thought, did I ever see a bib on that dude? And then I realized he wasn't in the race, so I had to go a mile and a half to get back to the race, to the Audubon Park. Then when I got
you should
Audubon
know Park, better. You only follow the guy in front of you if he knows Park. Where he's going.
Yeah. Not a mile later, I got lost again because I moved to the right for some cars, and one car was coming from behind me, and one was coming from in front, and there were arrows on the ground to say to go left along the levee. And they just happened to cross exactly where the arrows were.
Oh.
I got another half mile longer than I need to do. So my 50K that day was like a 34-mile run. But, I mean, I had it in me, obviously. I didn't die. But, I mean, I enjoyed the run. It's a great idea. I'm glad you do it. And it's so unique. And I saw parts of the city, like I said, never saw before.
Yep.
You run by these mansions that are so gorgeous. And then one had all these skeletons with these cool names.
Oh, yeah.
And just so unique. And just a great opportunity to enjoy New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while you're down there, go to the World War II Museum.
Yep.
I mean, just make it a New Orleans weekend. Go down there with your family. Enjoy that.
Absolutely.
So you do a great job with it, Casey.
So give us the dates of the race.
So this year it's going to be October 14th. I hope I'm saying that right. Whatever that Saturday is, we've kind of moved it around a little bit. We want to be respectful of some of the other ultras that are happening around that same time in the state of Louisiana, and not overlap with somebody else's race. But also we try to get it pushed back as far as we can in October to hopefully take advantage of a little bit better weather, because I'm not telling y'all anything that you don't know, but it gets pretty hot down here.
It does.
It's summer, 11 months a year. So
it is. All right. So now we want you to give us a little bit of some background on you, man. So tell us where you grew up and how'd you get down to the city?
Yeah. So I actually grew up in Kentucky. I mostly grew up in Lexington. And lived there a majority of my life, went to the University of Kentucky, and after college, actually lived in Knoxville, Tennessee for about 5 years.
Cool.
And I guess that's kind of where I started running. Mm-hmm. They had a really good track club there that just put on a bunch of races, anything from a, 5K race all the way up to half marathon, and I think even a full marathon. But I got involved in running when I lived there, eventually moved back to Kentucky, started getting into a little more of the marathons and the ultra marathons. And then 10 years ago, I moved down here to New Orleans. So kind of jumped around a little bit, but, been in New Orleans now for a decade, and I love being here. I also love to leave here. It's fun to get out and explore for a lot of different reasons, but it's a great city. And, kind of going back to the New Orleans Ultra, part of the reason I came up with that idea is, we're here talking about trail running in the actual city of New Orleans. We don't really have any trails. Now, you can find some dirt and go run on it, but that's not a trail. In the actual city, we really don't have any trails. You got to kind of get out and explore a little bit to truly see some trails. So the idea for the New Orleans Ultra was, let's show off the actual city because that's what we got. But in terms of actual trails, got to kind of get out a little bit and go explore to go find those. So I've been down here about 10 years. Absolutely love it. And, that's it.
Well, if you stick to the sidewalks in New Orleans, it's like running an actual trail.
Yeah, it's technical.
Run on the road than it is to run on the New Orleans sidewalks. I will tell you that from personal.
That's very true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, did you meet your wife in Louisiana? Or
I did. We actually met at a run group. Imagine that.
Oh my God, that's cool. Now.
Yeah. Or, our little running joke is that we met on Farmers Only too, but
that's all right.
Nobody actually believes that. Hey. But no, we met at a group run. So, I tell you what, we hit it off right from the very beginning. She actually just finished the Eugene Marathon. I just checked her time right before I jumped on here. So she's out in Oregon running with a friend of ours that used to live in New Orleans and another girlfriend of hers. So she's in all the same kind of craziness and nonsense that I am. So,
totally cool.
We're both cut from a similar cloth that we love to get out and adventure and mm-hmm. run races all over the place and travel and everything. So
that's awesome.
And you know what, if somebody were to ask me about Casey, I would say, Casey really seems he's moved to New Orleans and he really loves it.
Yeah.
But he also loves to get away from New Orleans and he likes to be
a lot. Yeah.
He's like loves the mountain.
Yeah.
And I am that same way too. I love the mountains too. I like being in the mountains. But he's a very good advocate for New Orleans and the city of New Orleans, and obviously loves it with coming up with the New Orleans Ultra Marathon.
Right, right.
Casey, you got into running so long ago. Like, you're, 34 now?
44, almost.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I'm a master's runner, man.
In mid-20s.
One of these days, I'm going
to... Only a day over 30 to me.
Now, you've been doing this since your mid-20s, though, right?
Yeah, I guess... I've really been running my entire life. I was one of those. I mean, even when I was in middle school, I always enjoyed running. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most kids when you're growing up, especially if you're playing sports, nobody likes to run. I mean, come on. Kids just don't do that. But for whatever reason, even when I was younger, I liked running.
Yeah.
I was never fast, but I always liked running the longer and slower, the more I enjoyed it. So, yeah, even as far back as middle school, I'd go and, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 miles just routinely. I just enjoyed doing it. But I really didn't do a whole lot of running, I would say, in college. I had my mind set on other things. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, kind of living too much of a sedentary lifestyle kind of got to me. And next thing you know, I'm in my mid-20s and out of shape and decided I want to get back into it. So I think I ran my first half marathon, maybe, God, coming up on about 20 years ago. And so I got into it as an adult, and I started running half marathons, and I got into marathons, then 50Ks and 50 miles, and now even doing 100. But those are hard.
So if you look Casey up on Ultra Sign Up, you'll see that he probably has the most impressive resume of running of any race director in Louisiana, other than maybe Walker Higgins, who is like an unworldly beast.
He's a little bit faster than me.
He is a B. He is not right. He's just so good. I mean, Casey has a very impressive list of race and been doing it for quite a long time. Like he didn't say, most of us get into it as a midlife crisis. He got into it at 25 or 26 years old. He didn't even wait till that.
So Casey,
yeah, and trying to keep going.
Yeah, you got to look. I'm way older than you are, and I just keep trying to move and putting one foot in front of the other. You get to New Orleans, okay, and then man, next thing you know, you're president of New Orleans Track Club. This highly esteemed, I mean, regional, nationwide track club. How did you morph into all of this stuff and into your racing? Ownership.
You know, that's because almost nobody else is dumb enough to do it. You know, there's only a select few of us. Now, that's the New Orleans Track Club. It's really an awesome organization. They're actually celebrating their 60th anniversary this year. And a few of the original members are still around and still somewhat active in the community. I've had a chance to meet a few of them. But it's, you know, it's a really cool organization. You know, to be around for 60 plus years says a lot. Got thousands of members, put on, you know, usually about 15 events a year. And in my time there, that's probably where I really got to learn the most, just about producing races and how to, you know, everything from permitting to insurance to marketing the event, you know, all that kind of stuff. And just learned a lot in my time there. And I was really thankful for, you know, the opportunity to serve. But it is definitely a thing. It's a big time commitment. There's a lot of effort that you put into it. You don't always necessarily get a huge payback. So I'll tell you, they're always looking for good people. So if either of you two want to move down here to New Orleans and volunteer or hop on the board, I'm sure they'd love to have y'all as well.
Well, the thing I thought about was just, you know, if I were president of the New Orleans Track Club, it would probably go under during my presidency because there's like so much to me. There's so much pressure because of what this track club has represented for the city. You know,
well, it almost went under in mine. I mean, Jesus, I got to actually. I joked that, you know, I was the president during the pandemic. So for half my presidency, we didn't even have races. So how hard can it be, right? There's nothing to screw up.
Yeah.
But the other thing with that organization, they've been around so long. It is so incredibly impressive that when you go out to an NOTC race, you know, most races start, 8 o'clock, 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. Go out to the race site at about 6 o'clock in the morning and just sit there and watch. And they'll have 20 people out there. You've got a couple people that always work registration. They just grab their boxes. They grab a couple tents. They go set it up and they get to work. You got people that that set up the course. They grab their stuff, load it in the truck, and they get to work. So there's just a bunch of very dedicated volunteers, timers, you know, people that know how the course setup and everything, that everybody just kind of scatters and does their own thing, and it just falls in into place. So it doesn't happen successfully without the efforts of a whole bunch of people that have been very, very committed for a very long time. So
no, and as race directors, we know it. You know, I sometimes think that the average runner who comes and runs this 5K has no clue what we go through.
Yeah,
what we actually do. I time too, so it's like, I'd rather run the race than have to do what we all have to do. But we do it because we enjoy it. It's been something that's been in our lives all this time. We all have our reasons for why we got in it. I certainly have mine. You have yours. Michael has his. But we enjoy it. And I'm sure in your race production, I tell people this all the time. They'll say, wasn't that so cool that you saw so and so run this race in 5K in 16 minutes or 14? I said, you know what's even more impressive is to see that girl or that older lady or man do it in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, knowing that they've just recovered from cancer or something. Yeah. I know that's maybe over the top, but that's what I get more out of that than seeing the people that win. That's just me.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And, you know, I actually produced and timed an event yesterday up in Baton Rouge, and it was for a church. Mm-hmm. And it was just so much fun seeing the passion that these people had. And it was a smaller event. They hadn't put it on. I think it had been 6 years since they put it on for a variety of reasons, but they brought it back.
Right.
And I mean, there was less than 100 people registered, you know, this year as they're just kind of getting it back up and running. But they were so incredibly passionate about it and excited, and they loved it. And they had had vendors and different people from the community, and they had an ice cream truck, and they had, you know, people, red beans and rice, and man, it was awesome. It's not always the biggest events that are the most fun or the most rewarding.
Not a bit.
So Casey, tell us a little bit about Lazy Hound Racing, named after your dog. I think his name was Booker.
Well, so Booker was my old beagle. He passed away a couple years ago, but Angela and I adopted. He's actually on the couch asleep, I think, behind me. But at some point in this interview, you might hear him. It's named after the both of them. So Booker is our my old beagle that passed, and then Merle is our hound mix. And so when I was with the track club, I don't know, I just started, you know, I was serving out my presidency. I was pretty much new once my presidency was done. That would have been 7 total years on the board, 2 as VP, 2 as president. And it's like, okay, this is enough. I had a great time, but once I'm done, I'm done.
There's something to be said for being the dictator.
Yeah.
You know, when you have to deal with the board, like, I just want to be a dictator for a while.
I like a benevolent.
And you're not a
dictator.
You're working with your wife, Angela, but you know.
Absolutely. Well, yeah.
Nothing like a
she
board
pushes
to make
me
you want
right.
to be a dictator, I'll tell
That's
you.
That's it. I've had that experience. I like being a dictator.
Yeah. And I don't know. I had a thought that it would make a lot of sense to start our own business. And, you know, I run a full-time business that's completely separate. So I knew producing races was not going to be a full-time commitment. It was going to be more of a part-time thing. And Angela and I talked about it, and she thought, well, she might want to jump into it full-time with me just kind of jumping in to help her out. So that was kind of our vision from the beginning. And then the other thing too is we kind of looked around at the other race directors in the city. And not to talk bad about it, anybody, but there's some old folks out there that are still out there kicking. So my good buddy Chuck George, I mean, he's like 70 or 71. He's been talking about getting out of the business forever.
Yeah.
Been an amazing race director for a long time. But I mean, he's been saying for years, I'm ready to get out, you know.
I didn't know he was still putting races on.
He is, and he's slowly, he's handed a few of them over to us, actually. I think we're going to be talking about to him about some other events that he's got, maybe taking over some of those or working something out with them. But yeah, I mean, most of the race directors in the city, they've been around a long time, and also everybody kind of has their niche, right? So the Crescent City Classic, if you guys have ever been down for that, amazing event. Eric Stewart and his family and their whole team, they do amazing stuff. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to put on an event that has 100 or 200 people registered. It's just not their thing. Mm-hmm. You know, same thing with Fresh Junkie, with Mike Watney and all those guys. They put on amazing races.
Right.
But they're kind of doing more of a regional thing. They're not really, you know, Chuck might have one or two races where they look at and say, we would like to jump in and take that over. But, you know, there's just kind of a niche there where there aren't that many people to really step in and do it. So we kind of figured at some point, you know, there's going to be an opportunity here where somebody's got to step in and fill the role. And we've been fortunate to be the recipient of a lot of that. And I think a lot more to come.
So you filled a niche, basically.
We did, and we're continuing to fill that niche, and really, I mean, we're kind of doing all this on the fly too, because, you know, from the very beginning, I mean, we've got three or four different race ideas of our own that we've been thinking about putting on. But at the same time, you got somebody like Chuck that's slowly working towards retirement. You've got other races like the one that we, you know, put on yesterday that just came back for the first time in 6 years. So we're trying to figure out, you know, which opportunities, you know, we can't say yes to everything. So we want to do a bunch of different stuff, but we want to make sure not to work ourselves to death and really just try to pick the events that we really want to focus on and pour our heart and soul into those and make them as best we can. But not necessarily put on 50 races a year either.
Well, let me throw another idea your way. We were talking to Edie Amon not too long ago about the No Man's Land, and she ordered medals for that, and it never happened. But she's willing to give those medals to a race director who wants to pick up the No Man's Land.
Yes, we nominate you.
And I mean, I want to run it, so I can't be in charge of it. Can't be in charge of it.
No.
We need somebody to be in charge of it so we can go and run it.
Yes.
Oh, man. Let's see. How much time do I have on my hands?
Well, we'll do it in February. Let's just go ahead and just set the date right now. February. Do it right now.
Not near the red dirt, before red dirt, hopefully.
After Azalea, before the red dirt.
And it's New Orleans. We don't ever do anything in February here. It's very low key.
Yep. You could do it, Casey. We believe.
Think about it, Casey. That's all we're saying. Think about the man's land taking it over.
But you know what? It brings up a good topic, though, because, again, we're here talking about trail running. We haven't really put a big emphasis on producing trail running events for our own just because – for the most part, I mean, Louisiana does have some really good trails, but we also don't want to cannibalize other events.
Yeah.
Cesar Torres, who I absolutely love, he kind of staked his claim on Bogachita. Now, he puts on events elsewhere, but, you know, we're not going to go over to Bogachita and put on a race. I mean, he does enough there. There's no sense in adding another one.
Okay.
You know, Edie does an amazing job in Chico. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Fawn with Kisatchee National Forest. Yeah. Angela and I went up and volunteered Red Dirt. Beautiful event, hugely successful this year. You know, so as you kind of go around the state, I mean, obviously you guys have, you know, kind of the central and northern part of the state. I mean, the Wild Azalea Trail is absolutely amazing.
Yes.
And it's a lot harder than people think. Well, it wouldn't make any sense for us to say, hey, I've got an idea. I'd love to put on a 50-miler on the Wild Azalea Trail, right?
It's already
kind of taken. So
yeah.
I love the idea of exploring and finding new places to put on trail running events that somebody else hadn't already, you know, jumped on.
Sure. Sure.
Well, there was that one there for years called the Danimal. And you might run it when it was the Danimal. Did you run it when it was the Danimal?
I never did.
Okay. How far is Lake Charles from you? About 2 hours?
No, it's more like three and a half.
And you know what? I put on one in Ruston, and it's an hour and a half from here. It's a little bit of a challenge when you have a race that is in an area, you know, where you're not from. Mm-hmm. But it would be easy for you because you have a marketing background.
Yeah.
You have a business background. I have an education background. Yours is in marketing and business.
What are you doing?
You're like custom suited for race directing.
Well, and something
the Terminator of race directing. He's built to do this.
Casey, he does that to me all the time. He'll go, hey, man, did you check out the trail at, Forest Lawn Trail outside of...
I think you should put a race on there.
I think you should put a race on there. And I'm like,
I don't want to be, walking around the start-finish line, for 17 hours. No. I want to be out there running it.
That's a 3.5-hour drive. That's like a whole week and a half. That's a week commitment for him.
I'll tell you what. I'll look at it. Well, and here's something else to think about, too, is... You know, in New Orleans, the greater New Orleans area, really South Louisiana, doesn't necessarily have a bunch of huge races because we're not really particularly close to a whole lot of stuff, right?
Right.
But Mike, being up where you are in Shreveport, I mean, there's what, 5 or 10 million people in Dallas, which is only a couple hours down the road.
Right.
Same thing with Lake Charles. You got 5 or 10 million people in the greater Houston area. So. So I think that could be a draw for the folks in those areas, even though it's in Louisiana, you start recruiting the people that live, an hour west of you in Texas, and all of a sudden you've got to really opens you up to a whole new world of people to market your race to.
That's true. Okay. I'll make this commitment, Casey. If you are the race director, Michael and I will come down and we'll help.
Okay.
We want to run, but we'll help. I mean, we are smart enough because we like a dictator. So you feel free to be the benevolent dictator over us. You have the last say. That's good.
We'll do what you tell us to do.
We'll do what you tell us to do.
And I made a promise, Angela, that I would not say yes to any race until she gave me the approval first.
So that's a smart husband.
Yeah, pretty smart.
That's how you stay married. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, so I'm gonna interject my favorite New Orleans race story ever. You ready, Casey?
Bring it on.
This is Crescent City Classic. This is circa 1970s. When I was putting on the Indian Creek Triathlon in Alexandria, Louisiana, I was the founder of it, a couple of buddies. We had a guy at the time as a lawyer in Opelousas named Al. That is his name. I won't use I won't say his last name.
Okay.
Al did a lot of like Rusty Beck, my buddy, put on Cajun Man, and I. We used Al as our announcer. Al had this great story. When Al was in law school at Loyola back in the 70s, okay, Crescent City had gotten two Russian chicks to come over. They were world class 10Kers, right?
Okay.
They had them come over to New Orleans, and they put them in a hotel. Of course, they had an escort, right? Because this was during the Cold War and all this stuff. So they put them in a hotel. Al was a key volunteer for the Classic, just one of those guys, and he was hanging around. And he was with a couple of other group that went to the hotel to welcome the girls, to New Orleans and all that. So they get to their hotel room. They introduce themselves, and they've got an interpreter, they've got their escort, and so they're talking to them, thanking them for coming, yada yada, and they say, is there anything we can get for you? Is there anything you need? All right? The two girls looked at each other, then they looked at the guys from the Crescent City and said, microwaves. And they said,
microwaves.
Microwaves? Yes, microwaves. Two microwaves. And then their escort spoke up and said, three microwaves. And so he turns to Al and he says, go down to Schwegman's and get three damn microwaves right now. That's what they wanted.
Heck,
isn't that a good story? I thought that was a good story. Yeah, yeah.
Of all the things they could bring home, not a pair of Levi's or...
No, they want a microwave, man.
Isn't there a difference in power stuff in Europe than there is here?
Well, you get adapters.
Okay.
Yeah. Still, I mean, it's a black market. You could get a black market.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? They get that microwave all the way home and it doesn't even plug
in. It doesn't even work. Doesn't even work. So, yeah, there we go.
So Casey, what's coming up for you? We're in April right now. What's coming up for you this summer running-wise and vacation-wise?
Oh, so I got into Western States this year. So
what?
I meant to say that. Yeah.
Yes, what? Y'all didn't know that.
No, I saw it on your ultra sign up. Oh, I
dude,
did.
That is so cool.
Pretty cool.
So I have been. I guess I had 6 qualifiers, but 8 total years of qualifying. I think I had missed. I think 1 year I didn't get a qualifier. Another year was COVID. So it's taken me 8 years, but I 6 entries, however many tickets that comes out to. But yeah, I went into the lottery this past year with like a 27% chance. And for some reason, I just had a really good feeling going into it. So got my name pulled and been training for it. I should probably be training right now instead of talking to you two guys, but happy to be here anyway. So, but yeah, that's the next race on my list. So I really... Once I got in, what was that, December, January, you know, whenever it was, I mean, it was kind of like, all right, I need 3 or 4 good months of doing nothing but focusing on that race. So so that's it. June 24th, been training for it.
Dude, that's awesome.
Pretty steadily for you know, a couple months now.
We're going to have a report. Michael, right? We gotta have a
Casey's done.
I certainly hope it's a really positive report.
Well, it shouldn't be, but I mean, you need to go to the Wild Azalea Trail Runners Facebook page and see a thing I posted on a participant from many years ago regarding. He was an attorney out in San Francisco. He'd like done Western States 4 or 5 times.
Wow,
it's a great article. He's like 75 years old now.
I know who you're talking about because he absolutely kicked my ass. What's his name? Gene.
No, this is another guy. But I know
another 70-something-year-old guy?
Huh?
Another 70-year-old
guy. Yeah. He was an attorney. And so just go on the Wild Azalea Trail Runners Facebook page and look it up. But, well, that's slick. Man, that's cool.
That's going to be exciting.
Yo, I'm pumped, man.
Is Angela going with you?
Yep, so she's going. Natalie Halepin is coming out there. She's Natalie used to live here when she was finishing up her med school and residency and all that. And then she is in North Carolina now. But she's coming out to Pace and Crew and has been coaching me and putting together a plan. And then couple other friends coming out as well. So, yeah, we got a pretty nice little crew. And I'll need all the help that I can get. So, a lot of times with races, I never like asking people to pace and crew. But
yeah.
with Western States, I almost feel – I don't want to say it's a one and done. But, I mean, it's taken me 8 years just to get in one time. So, since I'm not an elite and I don't have, you know, 20 million Instagram followers, this is pretty much my one shot at knocking it out. So
it sounds like you're kind of like I am with pacing. Like, I mean, I know I can do a lot of things on my own, so I don't want to impose upon people to ask them to pace.
Mm-hmm.
But when exactly. somebody asks me to pace, it doesn't feel like an imposition to me at all.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do it. But for some
reason, me too.
When I think to ask someone, I feel like I'm imposing on them, even though I don't feel that way when they ask me. I'm really happy to help, you know, and them do it.
I'm the same way. I always feel like I'm imposing. But what you really find, too, I mean, if you've ever been to any of these big ultras, it's just it's a totally different vibe. And I say big ultras, not even necessarily in terms of size, you know, more historical races. Races that bring out more elite competition. You know, I've never been to Western States, but I can't wait to be around and see what that vibe is like and feel that energy. It's basically the biggest biggest ultra in the States. So
that's
should be pretty awesome.
That is absolutely it. That's it, man. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
All right, so Casey, real quick, give us what's the next race coming up for Lazy Hound Racing?
What do we have going on next? Well, you know, we kind of do a few different things. So when we decided to start our business, honestly, we didn't really know what the hell we were getting into. And turns out you need a bunch of equipment to put on a race. Brad knows.
Do you have a storage unit now?
Need time. Do what?
You have a storage unit?
Yeah. We do have a storage unit, and it's packed to the freaking gills with junk.
I use mine stuff twice a year, but you probably use yours 10, 20 times a year.
We're there way too much. But we actually lucked into, as we were looking around for people to time our first event, we found a couple that said, "No, we're out of the business. We gave up because of COVID." Yeah. And I said, "Well, what are you doing with all your equipment, if you don't mind my asking?" And they practically like leapt through the phone in the email at me and were like, "Please, please buy our stuff."
Oh, sweet.
And so we pretty much, we own it all. So we've got all the timing equipment, all the PA systems, the start finish line truss. We got all that crap.
So you had to
and,
all that out.
Yeah. And the couple that we bought it off of, they've been wonderful. Yeah. They come out to our races when they can, and they still help out, you know, when they're available. So it's really worked out because they were just done. We jumped into it. So, long-winded answer to your question. The next race we have coming up, we're timing a little 5K down in Paterson, Louisiana on Saturday. I've never even heard of Paterson, Louisiana. I had to look it up on a map. But we kind of do a little bit of the full suite where we will just time races. We will sort of do like a kind of a race in the box, if you will, where if somebody already has the permit, they got the insurance lined up, they've got the logos, all that, we pretty much just show up on race day and bring out the whole trailer full of crap, the start finish line, the PA and the timing. So that's what we did yesterday. That was called the Running Reverend 5K. It was awesome in Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
And then
what church and then is it in Baton Rouge? I'm sure it's
Abounding Love Ministries. It was in Scotlandville, near Southern.
I used to live in Baton Rouge. That's why I want to know.
Yeah, it was awesome. Just really, really cool group. And then the bigger events that we put on, those are ones where Angela will truly serve as the race director, and she's doing all the hard behind the scenes work of getting everything lined up to make it happen on race day.
So
we're timing a race in Paterson. We're doing the week after Girls on the Run, which is a national organization. They're doing a glow run, so through the through Lafreniere Park, so it starts at night. That one's gonna be a lot of fun. And then I think our two after that, the River Shack series. So River Shack is a bar / restaurant, one on the East Bank, one on the West Bank. So we're doing a 2 mile series with them. And then doing a little race set up for the Kiwanis Club in Chalmette in June. And then I think we finally take a break.
That's good. That's good.
All right. Well, Casey, thank you for joining us on this episode of Louisiana. I always do. I'm actually done.
No, I'm not.
You got so many other great questions.
That would be a good wrap up.
No.
All right, go ahead, Brad.
Casey, what is your favorite trail in Louisiana?
I would say, and I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, the Wild Azalea Trail is amazing. I absolutely love it. I wish more people knew about it. Mm-hmm. I wish it was closer to my house.
True.
I would say that is probably the prettiest trail. Right. And then I would say probably Chico is my second favorite. I just love, I'm going to say a 20-mile loop, although we all know it's a little short, but don't tell Edie because I want to do a 95-mile 100.
Yeah.
I absolutely love Chico. Well, Chico, to me, is what Louisiana Trail Run is all about.
That's
you get
what
your
I was
swamps.
Just gonna say. That's what I was just going to say.
You get your bridges. I mean, it's just quintessential Louisiana.
So, hey, man, so if you want to come up north a little bit and train for Western State, I've got some ideas of some places we can run. Hit me up.
Eagle Rock Loop.
I've got to come up and run the monkey trails with you at some point.
Well, you can just come up with the Screaming Monkey in November, but I mean.
It's always right around my birthday, too. So one of these weekends, I'm finally.
For yourself.
One of these years, I'm going to finally have the weekend free and be able to sign up and come up.
We might have to ask Angela to do that race. To give you the present of the Screaming Monkey.
Okay. In celebration of Casey being here, this is a quiz for Michael Prayer.
Oh, okay. All right. Wait, this is for me?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Casey knows the answer. Kentucky is also referred to as the?
Bourbon State.
Wrong.
Bluegrass State.
Thank you, Casey. Why? How could you not miss that? True or false? Is the grass in Kentucky blue or green?
It's green.
Blue.
Well, so it's fall. You did that terribly.
Wait, you changed it. Okay. Is it illegal to fish with a bow and arrow in Kentucky?
I would think no, but I'm going to say yes, true.
I'm going to say no.
It is illegal. Yeah.
Wow.
You can bow fish in Louisiana, that's for sure, with a bow and arrow.
Yes. In Frankfort, Kentucky, which is the state capital, right?
Correct.
Thank you. I knew that. Is it illegal to shoot off a policeman's tie?
I would say that's illegal to shoot any firearm.
That's illegal. I'm sorry, Casey.
Yeah, I guess it should be.
Okay, who would you say is one of? Name me. Let's do this way. Who would you say is the most famous University of Kentucky graduate who is an actress?
An actress.
It's an easy question, don't you think? Casey.
I think so.
She's the country singer's daughter. What's her name? Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd, yes.
Yeah, Ashley Judd.
Okay, Casey and I may have a disagreement on this one, but who would you say was the greatest basketball player in the history of the University of Kentucky Wildcats?
Wildlife
basketball.
Oh, man, I don't even.
You've got one I think was the greatest, and I've got another one. When I was growing up, I loved to watch play. But
it would be.
I have no idea.
I'm going to give you three names. I'm going to let you pick between them. Right, Anthony Davis, Jamal Mashburn, and Dan Issel.
He got one of them right.
I give it Jamal Mashburn.
Dan Issel. Come on, Casey. The original, the big guy.
Yeah. Mashburn's all I've ever heard of. Really? Well, I heard of Anthony Davis. He played for New Orleans, I think, for a while.
He did, didn't he? Didn't Anthony Davis play
for New Orleans? He did, indeed.
Also, you know who I used to love to watch because he ought before free throw? Here's me this, Casey. Before every free throw, he would wipe his hands on his socks.
Kyle Macy.
Yes, Kyle Macy. Way to go.
Wasn't Anthony Davis the, like, unibrow guy?
That's him.
Okay.
Yeah, he plays for the Lakers now.
Yeah.
There we go. All right, I'm done.
All right, so, hey, Casey, thank you for joining us on the Louisiana Trail Report.
Thanks, Casey.
Hey, would you hang on for just a second? I want to talk to you after we end the recording.
Absolutely. That was a ton of fun, guys.
Thanks, Casey.
Welcome back, everybody. Michael just got out of the bathroom, and that was a really – oh, he's back. Michael, are you okay?
I'm adjusting my mic. Man, okay. What a great interview we had with Casey.
Great interview with Casey.
And I enjoyed talking about the Louisiana Ultramarathon, and I had a great time when I went down there to New Orleans that year and did the Ultramarathon with Casey, and I just wanted to say that year when I was doing the Louisiana Ultramarathon, I got lost two times, but that was my fault and not the marking's fault.
Right.
One time I just wasn't paying attention. The second time the cars were over top of the chalk and I didn't see the turn. But you know what? When I saw Cesar that year at the Audubon Park, it was near this little lake in Audubon Park.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the funniest things I've ever seen on a run. There was this woman, and she had two beautiful long-haired golden retrievers with her near the duck pond.
Yeah.
And I just remember I'd just seen Cesar, and he had an aid station. I went by that, and I'm running by this woman. She's got these two beautiful golden-haired Labrador retrievers, and they're surrounded by ducks.
There's got to be 30 or 40 ducks surrounding these dogs. And just one of them looked at me. One of those golden retrievers turned and looked at me. And the look in his eyes was like, kill me now. He was like going against every instinct in his retriever body because he was surrounded by ducks. And it was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life, running an ultra.
So was it one of those moments that you just kind of lingered and observed?
I actually stopped and walked for a second, and I'm like,
I like
this
moments.
Is against every cell in this dog's body. Every cell in this dog's body is saying, I should grab this duck by the neck and shake the hell out of it.
But it's not doing it,
But it wasn't doing it. But it looked at me like, dude.
Carnage.
Do you know what I'm going through right now, dude? And I know what he was going through. I wanted to shake those ducks myself.
Okay, well, I mean, that's an interesting observation, Michael. But you have these interesting observations.
I have interesting observations.
It was really nice talking to Casey. He's a nice young man, the future of race directing in Louisiana.
Maybe the future race director of No Man's Land.
Let's hope so. Let's get him involved in that. That would be super. And I would go down and help. But here's the other thing. October, let's look at our schedules. I would love to go down and at least do the half marathon version of the New Orleans Ultra, Urban Ultra. Huh?
If you want to share a hotel room with me, I'm willing to go.
Can we camp out in our tent cots?
I mean, where?
No, that's
Do you have a friend in New Orleans that we can stay in their backyard? You got a backyard we can stay in. I'm down for it.
Well, I mean, yeah. Okay, I think near Audubon Zoo, I may have some friends near Audubon Zoo.
If you have a buddy we can, and it's safe to stay in their backyard, I'll be happy to stay in my tent cot in their backyard.
And they have porta-johns, which is kind of like a pit toilet, but that's probably not as good, but it's still fine.
I mean, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll do that. So, all right, so what are we looking forward to on next episode?
Next episode, I want to talk about the top five pit toilets in Louisiana. If you're listening to this episode, go to the Louisiana Trail Report Facebook page. Mm-hmm. I made a post there, and post your favorite pit toilet so we can do a little bit of research on it. We can have some information, or we can reach out to you to get some information on it. And we'd like to do a top five pit toilets in Louisiana. Most likely, they're going to be on national forest land.
Yeah.
Because that's mostly where pit toilets are, out in the middle of nowhere.
I mean, I think a pit toilet is an architectural genius.
I think that's a reach.
A sanitary genius. I mean, I love a good pit toilet. Have I said that?
You have an unnatural love for pit toilets.
I do. I love pit. It's like I have to go, whether the need is there, I have to walk into a pit toilet just to observe.
Okay, so pit toilet etiquette. Do you walk in and just try to breathe through your mouth, or do you try to still breathe through your nose?
Well, it depends on whether or not a certain person that we know has used it before I walked into it. It depends on the individual, but I typically like to breathe through my mouth in a pit toilet.
You know, smell is generated by bacteria, and if you start breathing through your mouth, then you're getting that bacteria on your tongue. And although your tongue probably isn't as sensitive as your nose is to the bacteria, you're putting that bacteria on your tongue then.
I've had a good life, Michael.
So you want fecal matter on your tongue?
I'm fine. I've had a good life. Okay. But we'll discuss my extreme love of all things pit toilets on the next episode.
All right. So this has been a Louisiana Trail Report Episode 6 featuring the Lazy Hound Racing co-owner, Casey Urschel, and also the director of the New Orleans Ultra Marathon, which we are talking about trying to do next year. And we definitely suggest you do it.
Yeah. So that's it. So, Michael, thank you. And happy trails, everybody.
All right. Happy trails. Brad, play us out.
We'll do.